Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files. Now listen folks, the plan today was to check in and continue our look at the BTK killer. But Dad and I were obviously, as the rest of the nation has been, and indeed much of the world, deeply disturbed by the events at Bondi Junction on the weekend. So what we've done is we've made an executive decision, and we have decided to talk about that today because there's lots of people who want more details, and we thought it might be useful just to take a moment and reflect on some of those details. Obviously, it's an evolving situation. It's an extraordinarily sensitive situation. But basically, for those of you who have sort of dodged this, and Dad, in short, the whole thing kicked off at about 3:10 p.m. yesterday. But Dad, The way this started for me was that I got a very strange phone call from you. Could you walk listeners and myself through what you told me yesterday?
Okay, so having been in the police force and Christine having been in the police force,
yeah,
we're very, very in tune. So just for listeners, and there probably won't be many listeners that don't know this, but if you combine all my emergency service time, it's close to 20 years. Mm-hmm. That's a long time. And even though I've left those jobs, I'm acutely aware of a fairly subtle thing, which I'd like to run by you. That is that when Christine and I see police in an emergency situation with lights and sirens,
yeah,
and the same with fire engines, and the same with ambulances. What the driver's doing is that they are assessing the amount of risk mm-hmm. they are going to utilize from getting from A to B. Being when they get the call, mm-hmm. they get a description over the various radios, and they are responsible for the lives and safety of everyone on board the appliance or the ambulance, the police vehicle, but more importantly, okay, so many things are going through their minds. They have to figure out, if they're just on patrol, how to get to the location, but also they have to give extreme consideration to the safety of the public. And something happened to me yesterday that precipitated me coming home and calling you. That was that William Street, which is like a massive, I guess the letter U would sort of describe it. So you've got the top of the CBD, you go all the way down William Street, and right at the bottom, it then starts to go all the way back up to the famous Coca-Cola sign. I was right at the bottom of the U. I had a red light with numerous pedestrians in front of me crossing. And I looked in my rear vision mirror, and I saw a police car coming down William Street at a speed that, and I could see it just getting close to me really, really quickly. And I thought, in fact, I knew that something fucking heavy was going down. I had no idea what it was. And I was in a situation, thank God, I was at the front, and I used my rear vision mirror and all the mirrors to check, and I knew that they couldn't overtake all the cars and go onto the opposite side of the road because there were three or four lanes coming down from the beaches, like Bondi Beach, which is a major thoroughfare. So what I had to do, and they came right up to the back of me, and they did not quite often in traffic, emergency service vehicles stop their sirens. They just go, you know what, we can't. So what in effect they were doing is that they were wanting me to move through and basically weave and dodge all the pedestrians, which is a very, it's not a comfortable thing. And I only had a split second to make the judgment call. So I negotiated through the pedestrians. In a perfect world, the pedestrians wouldn't sort of come out onto the road, but they've already started to cross the road.
Yeah.
And pedestrians do, in fairness, when they get a green light, they do have got pretty serious, they've got serious right of way.
Yes.
And police cars, police vehicles, emergency service vehicles do not have a right to go through a red light. It's a privilege. And they have to use extreme caution. But when they start getting other cars involved, like just members of the public.
Yeah.
So what I did, I sort of made my way through, hooked it right over to the left, and off they went. By the time I got to the Coca-Cola sign, which was about 1 minute later, there's a text message. I'm at a red light, I'm waiting, and I could see it was from Christine.
Okay.
I called Christine, and she said, John, I have been listening to sirens for the last 20, 30 minutes. Christine said to me, I have never, ever heard so many sirens. So we both, when I got home, we could just, there were sirens every, it was just insane. They're all heading in one direction, which is east towards Bondi.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also like to say at this juncture that we live within metres of King's Cross Police Station.
Yeah.
That afternoon, when Christine and I were walking back home, there were in excess of 20 police cars, detectives, paddy wagons, unmarked cars. And it was the most surreal situation. It was a beautiful, sunny Saturday afternoon in Sydney, around about 2 p.m. And we actually thought, wow, we discussed it amongst ourselves and said, this is very surreal that there just can't be anything happening in Sydney. It's just so, so quiet and so weird. Then the shit hits the fan. Helicopters and everyone, or those that listen to this podcast, know that I disconnected the TV antenna so we don't get free-to-air TV, and went on a couple of news apps, and the whole situation began to unfold, and the realization that that is a place that Christine and I go to minimum once a week.
Yeah,
it is a really complicated building. Not 2 weeks ago, and Christine and I would have been there 200 or 300 times, you can still get lost in there. It's so complicated. And the thing that makes it really difficult, and we need to think about the emergency service, the police, is that it's a rabbit warren. And there's this bridge that crosses over a road and interconnects two segments of the Westfield Shopping Centre.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the news started to come slowly that there was a major incident, and they weren't sure whether it was one or two offenders, and it began to unfold this terrible, terrible story of tragedy, and it was just distressing. I found it really upsetting.
It's been interesting because it has effectively completely stopped the news across Australia. We do have listeners overseas, but we've been getting messages from foreign leaders basically wishing us the best. The whole thing's been happening in real time. There've been deaths, but like I said at the start, Dad, you gave us a call, right? You buzzed in and said, hey, you told us a story about the cars, and we were very curious as to what was happening, so Tegan and I went, shit, okay. So we went onto Twitter. Now, that was a mistake, because Twitter is full of people who are saying some pretty inflammatory shit, right? I mean, it was getting pretty real. And people were speculating in really intense, very stressful ways, which turned out to be patently untrue and frankly just sort of fermented all kinds of hatred. But the whole thing kicked off, like I said, at 3:10 p.m. at Westfield Shopping Centre at Bondi Junction, like you said, somewhere that I am also very familiar with, and it's a vast complex. So this guy arrives at the complex, but what we were told on Twitter was that there was a possible terrorist incident happening at Bondi Junction, that there had been stabbings, and the person had a knife and potentially a gun and was shooting into the crowd, that it may have been more than one person, and that it may have been terror-related, right? So at this point, it's just a sort of soup of misinformation and speculation. And more steady heads are getting online saying, listen, you can't speculate about this shit. This is real people's lives are at stake here. You need to wait for the police to do what they do.
Hmm.
But amidst this, Dad, and this is what I wanted to tell you, people were in the shopping center filming this guy on their phones and posting the footage online. Now, bits of the footage got pulled back down, but I was unfortunate enough to scroll past a few snippets of footage. And the piece that got me was of this man in a sports jersey, beard, holding a knife. And he was halfway up one of those escalator ramp things, you know, in a shopping center. Yeah. And there was a guy at the top of the ramp holding a stand of some sort. Basically just holding the guy off. I didn't see many people around, and this is a very, very typically crowded shopping center. So what's clearly happened is this is mid or late into the spree, and somebody has had the guts to stand there and fend the guy off when he's trying to ride this escalator up. There's incredible, disturbing footage of people flooding out of the center. There is so much happening here, but what happens now? I think things came to a head on level 4 in the shopping center. I'm looking at a map of the shopping center. So according to the timeline, as released by the news, 3:10 is when this guy arrives at Westfield, right? Mm. And then apparently he leaves the shopping center. And 10 minutes later, he comes back at about 3:20. And then he starts making his way through Westfield, attacking people with a very large knife. And then shoppers start calling the police. Now, that's around when the police start flooding in because they're getting reports of something that's happened. People are running from the center. People are taking shelter in stores. People are filming on their phones. People are trying to help at this point. The police arrive, and it's at this point I'd like to talk about somebody called Inspector Amy Scott, who was... Now, we talk in this podcast about being out of area. Obviously, with an incident like this, I'm assuming big calls go out drawing in police from places they don't normally work, but it's my understanding that Inspector Amy Scott was actually... This was her beat, effectively, yeah?
Well, the Tactical Response Group, Special Weapons and Operations... You know, like marksmen, riot squad, civil disobedience, public order, riot, general duties, highway patrol, countless ambulances, definitely fire brigade.
Gotcha.
In case they're, they have to prepare for every scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Here is a police officer. She's working one out. Why is she working one out? Because...
What do you mean one out? What does that mean?
She's just by herself.
Oh, okay.
She's not with a partner.
That is unusual, isn't it?
It is unusual, but what she was doing that has sort of slipped through the cracks of this whole story is that she was actually attending to premises within the Westfield Shopping Centre that have a license to sell alcohol. And she was simply checking up on their RSA, Responsible Service of Alcohol. You know, she's carrying a pad, she's checking in with the licensees, making sure that the staff understand, you know, the obligations of the bars, of which there are numerous. You know, there's the massive cinema complex upstairs. God knows what happened. I mean, just you can imagine watching a film, and these are licensed premises, particularly in the gold lounges, and all of a sudden they would have received word that in their building. And the incredible thing also to consider, and one of the most terrifying aspects of this story, is that the offender was moving up. Okay, so this police officer who's armed with the, you know, the Glock, which is issued to all police, she starts hearing people are shouting out to her and basically guiding her to hopefully where this terrible incident that she really doesn't fully understand, but she knows it's... And she would have heard sirens, and all of a sudden she realised that she's at the pointy end of this hole. She's right in it.
Yeah.
And she follows, and she's being guided by all these witnesses.
She ends up... A lot of them. I think following up to the fifth level, right? Like she gets... Yeah, okay.
And she actually confronts the offender.
Yeah.
And he turns, and he raises his knife, from what we've been able to glean, and she discharges her firearm into his chest. I don't know how many shots were fired, but I've heard shots, so more than one.
I heard three is what I heard. But again, this is just because you've got people hiding in shops. You've got people. I mean, information is going to be sketchy at best. Because look, listen, when we started getting those tweets happening, right, about a gunman who had, you know, a knife and a gun, multiple people. We didn't hear knife. The first thing people mentioned was the shots being fired. So it seems like the spree of misinformation was happening after he'd already been taken down by this officer. Which I find very interesting timeline-wise.
Agree. And the first thing that the police officer did was commence CPR.
Imagine I heard that.
Well, that's a fact. And you hear that many, many times when these things happen. Mm-hmm. Police shoot, then they try and resuscitate. So there she is. She's just shot this guy who's already murdered a number of people and injured more than 10.
Mm-hmm.
And she commences CPR. I don't know how long she did that, but possibly until paramedics arrived. I don't know.
Okay. Right.
People were actually locked in shops. Every single shop in that complex has a glass front, and it looks out into this incredible expanse of sort of tiled floors. And then in the middle of every floor, there's this huge cutaway section, or a couple of them, that sort of drop right down to the very bottom. And it's a real chasm. It's like sort of looking over a precipice. And if you fired a gun or screamed or even dropped something, the noise would reverberate throughout the complex.
So you're saying if you are in hiding or whatever, the acoustics of any gunshots would seem like there was a lot. Yeah, okay.
Look, honestly, some of the stories about extreme bravery, heroism.
Mm.
Can you imagine all... There were people that were dropping to their knees and trying to stem the flow of blood because they're all knife wounds.
Yeah.
And I've thought long and hard about this. And you really can't prevent this type of incident.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
People have been speculating as to where he got the knife. Well, I'll tell you something. There are a lot of shops within Westfield where you can go in, providing your, I guess a minimum of 15 or 16, maybe 18, and you can buy some of the best knives, individual knives, because it's not an offence to buy a knife if you're a chef or you want one for home.
Unlike guns, knives actually have, you know, household uses.
Yes. So you go in there. Christine and I, we could sit here and name. You can go into David Jones and they've got one of the best displays of the finest Japanese knives. They're like razor blades. And I know what a knife can do. And I've been contemplating and thinking long and hard about the procedures, and I've decided that I'm not going to talk about what I think. It's sort of at the very, in terms of minute detail. But, you know, we can speculate. And so many things have been, you know, considered by many, many people. And I've been onto a few threads and read some of the stuff, and it's just, it's very, very depressing. And I again say to everyone, thank God for the police, but also thank God for the police that are not, they're not judges. They get out there, they do what they have to do, but they don't stand idly by once they've shot someone and just go, oh, well, you know. No, they do what they have to do, and they don't, it's not their job. The police force in I guess all of Australia, hopefully, you know, it's their job to protect, you know, people's lives. But they also have an obligation to look after the person they've shot. And I think the way that is pretty damn good. Now, there was a lot of speculation. All sorts of things were being said. You know, the fact that he had a beard. I mean, God help any man in Australia, and maybe even some women who've got a beard.
What's interesting is, when I talked about the Twitter photos, Tegan and I saw photos on Twitter, and the replies under this photo of a skinny man with a dark beard holding a knife from a very, very grainy piece of footage, there was a lot of stuff being said, a lot of racial profiling, and a lot of assumptions being made. Things are extraordinarily heightened right now.
I've dug up a photo of the offender, and I showed the photo before we went on air to Christine. Right. And you can't get a normal looking person. But here's something that is a tragedy, because there are many tragedies in this story. But one of the, for me, a very sad aspect of this case, of which there are numerous, but we need to sort of maintain. There'll be people out there that go, look, we don't need any balance. It's what has happened is appalling. But it was the murderer's family in Queensland. They are the first people that recognised their son and contacted the police immediately. Now, this is very important. The family of their son that has committed these series of atrocities, one of the first things they said to the police in Queensland, and it was conveyed to our police here, was that they felt incredibly sorrowful and sad and terribly upset about the welfare, the mental welfare of the female police officer that shot their son. All their sadness, or a great deal of their sadness, went. And I think that's extraordinary. And I think people need to really draw great, not comfort, but, you know, what an extraordinary family to think about the person that's just shot their son. I think that speaks volumes, and it's very, very. Yeah. And then there's the mother, the 38-year-old mother, who is with her 9-month-old baby. She gets stabbed. She's going. The injuries would have been massive, massive injuries, and she actually, knowing that her life was probably going to pass. In that final act, she gave her 9-month-old baby to some people that were close by and said, please look after my baby. they've operated on the baby overnight,
mm-hmm.
and the baby is in a serious but stable condition. The mother passed away. Two of the deceased are there from overseas. They're trying to contact their families, and that's the right thing to do. You don't go announcing to the Australian press, and of course, by default, international press. Some mm-hmm. this how big is this story? I'll tell you. Christine and I got some of our information from the Bangkok Post. We got some information from the BBC. It was the second lead story on the BBC. And when you consider the lead story has been Iran, you know, sending some 200 or 300 missiles towards Israel.
Oh,
and then this Bondi story is number yeah. two.
Yeah.
Not that one likes to rate. The heads, as you said earlier on in this podcast, the heads of many, many countries have... Mm. It's resonated. And Paul, you know, this is... We're not in the habit of interrupting our main sort of, you know, our main story, which is the BTK killer.
Yeah.
We don't do this lightly. But I had some of our listeners in England and Europe wrote to me personally last night, and they were wanting to know.
Yeah.
Were we okay? And look, there were so many acts of, you know, heroism, bravery. I mean, we talk about people that are filming incidents, events. The upside is that it enables people to disseminate visual information very, very quickly in real time, which the police can use, which is really important to find out, you know, exactly how armed they are. The news threads grab onto it. It's a double-edged sword about people. And I think someone in Western Australia wrote to me today and said, you know, they sort of questioned the whole thing about, you know, police being filmed. And
wait, what do you mean?
Well, in terms of, you know, police are all in the back of their minds. They're aware that they're being filmed as they right. draw their gun.
Mm.
And that's not the time to be having second thoughts or hesitating, is it? Imagine you're thinking, shit, I'm about to... These things are happening in real time and you know, and then imagine looking over for a brief moment and seeing people behind glass all filming you. Look, it's a thing that is just complicated. And
There's something we haven't actually talked about much, which I'd like to sort of just dive into quickly before we, you know, lose the thread. I actually want to just quickly talk about the victims. So, as of the time of this recording, there are 6 victims. So, 4 women and 1 man died at the scene. A 6th woman died in hospital later on. In fact, I was on air last night when that happened, and we reported that live. 12 people injured on top of those people in hospital, which means he... And then, of course, the worst part of this for me, and that is that one of the people who was stabbed was a 9-month-old, a baby. St. Vincent's Hospital is where 4 of the patients were sent. Again, a hospital I'm very familiar with. It's odd that this is... Not odd. It hits very close to home that all of this is happening in places that I feel so comfortable in and around.
Mm.
Just tying back to the perpetrator, because they know who he is now.
Yep.
And it's been a little tricky. Like you said, his family came forward, but he was identified formally by the police because as we were doing news dispatches on the radio last night, we weren't wanting to speculate. And one of the things I asked, because we did a live cross to one of the to Tamsin, a reporter from The Guardian. At that point, he hadn't been identified yet. And I said, has he been identified? And she said, no, we need to wait for the police. And this morning, he was revealed to be 40-year-old Joel Couchy, who is from Queensland. And obviously, that's where his family is based. Mm. He was living in, I believe he was living in a storage facility in Sydney. He had noted mental health problems. And the police have been very, very clever and respectful and accurate in saying that having mental health issues does not make you this kind of person. This is a unique case. They're working on some profiling right now. I don't think he was known for being a criminal or for criminal activity.
Never been arrested or charged, ever.
But he was on the police's radar, apparently.
Yeah. Like, he's sort of a bit of an itinerant. You know, up around the cross, we've got these people and you see the police talking to them occasionally.
Mm.
They're known to the police, but they're not necessarily... The police are just letting them know, and it's good policing. And it's also building a rapport with people that are, you know...
Mm.
It's a tough one, Paul.
Guardian Australia posted something about an hour ago, less than an hour ago. And this is very strange for me, and that is CCTV footage of Couchy at a place called Saigon Noodle at Oxford Street, in the mall on Oxford Street, about 3 hours before the attack, ordering lunch.
Yep.
He's got a backpack on, he's wearing exactly the same clothes, it's top-down footage, and he's ordering lunch. Not that this means anything, but it does sort of help provide a timeline for a guy who I think had a bit of a plan, potentially, but who knows? I mean,
yeah, Paul. Look, you know, there's not going to there'll be a coronial inquiry,
mm-hmm.
but there's not going to be he's not going to give evidence.
No,
and if he didn't write anything or say anything to anyone, it's a simple speculation of what people think led him, and it's bad in a way because some really bad shit comes out that is not accurate because people just they go crazy. And that's why, Paul, someone wrote to us, one of our hardcore fans, just before we went on air, and I simply wrote back, and he's so lovely. He said, look, I'm sure you and Paul will do a great job. And I said, yes, we will do it with respect and try and be objective, but just sort of try and give the facts, because it's, you know, are you aware, Paul, that it's, well, for the listeners, it's Sunday afternoon and you're going to hear this on Tuesday or possibly tomorrow, Monday, but the bodies are still in situ. Think about that.
Right.
It's now been 24 hours.
Mm.
And imagine being the families. It's just, and Paul, I'd also like to say that overnight, three more people presented themselves to hospitals that they didn't know about. Right. Three more people that have been stabbed. That's extraordinary. It's just unbelievable. But I'll tell you what, this is, they might provide extra security, but it's a tough one. I've always believed that. Look at the knife attacks in London where that Australian girl jumped off the bridge into the Thames. She was missing for days. The poor family. She jumped to avoid being stabbed.
Mm.
You know,
it's the knife. Yeah. A couple of other little pieces that I want to roll in. One is that a bunch of the misinformation that's happened is, you know, it comes from a place of sometimes ignorance, sometimes bigotry, sometimes misinformation, sometimes just getting swept up in the fervor of things. But a major news outlet referred to him. They posted a YouTube video on their news page and they referred to him as a lone wolf attacker. Now, the problem with that terminology is lone wolf implies that he is a terrorist and that he has a solo agenda, which the videos were made private. It was taken down. But the damage that sort of labeling does for people who are looking for confirmation bias, you know, they're going, oh, he's clearly XYZ, and they look online and they see something like that, and then they tell their friends and they tell their friends, and we're off to the races. So misinformation is a big deal. The second thing I want to raise, Dad, is that there was an interview with the woman who served Joel Couchy at the restaurant, at the little noodle place in Oxford Street Mall, which, by the way, I was wrong. I thought it was in the city. It turns out Oxford Street Mall is just next to Westfield. So it's about 100 metres from Westfield. Mm. So according to this woman who served him, he came at 10 a.m. but didn't have any money, so came back at 12. He seemed confused when he ordered. Normal but confused. He opened his wallet and paid. He ate... What he ate doesn't matter. I was going to read that. And finally, I'd like to say that Anthony Albanese praised our strong gun laws, saying that if he had access, you know, if he had access to an AR or something like a massive automatic weapon, a lot more people would have died. And one of the things I'm proud of in this country is that we have strong gun regulation. It this bullshit that, you know, the only thing that stops a madman is a good guy with a gun is absolute horseshit. And I'm very thankful more people weren't hurt. Very thankful. The information coming in about Cauchy is, it's going to keep coming in. Like I said earlier, they are still building up a profile. But when in doubt, check multiple news sources. And when in doubt, avoid news sources that could be classified as tabloids. Try and get as many verifiable facts as possible. Avoid going to social media for your first hit of information, because whilst it might be fun and instantly gratifying to see the tweets roll by or to see people speculating on TikTok or whatever, or to see, you know, people on Facebook on a thread sort of throwing information around, verifiable news sources are the only way this stuff is going to be handled properly. So our thoughts and prayers are with everybody affected. And just a quick PSA, there's two numbers here which I think are useful. One is that if you were there and if you saw something that you think the police need to see, you can call Crime Stoppers on 1-800-333-000. And if you need help with mental health, if this is triggering you, if you want to talk to somebody, Beyond Blue are fantastic. You can call them on 1-300-222-4636, or you can head to beyondblue.org.au.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. Shopify.com/retail23.